Welcome back to the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Greg Migliori. We have an awesome show for you this week. It's the Detroit Auto Show. There's several, I almost hesitate to say big reveals, but they're interesting, they're important, they're significant. Let's put it that way. So we're going to break that down as well as the feeling from the show floor. And with that, I will bring in senior editor for all things electric, John Snyder, and road test editor, Zach Palmer. How are you guys doing?
Can't complain. Great fall weather. Had a successful show yesterday. And looking forward to whatever comes this weekend in terms of, you know, we might get some big news over the weekend. We'll see.
All right.
Yeah. I'm doing great too over here. Off a couple of late nights with Ford, actually. I already mentioned the F-150. I know that we got to see Darius Rucker together this week.
That was fun.
That was fun. Yeah. A lot of Detroit stuff happening.
Yeah, it's a busy week. Let's put it that way. All right, things we're going to break down. The F-150, the Mach-E Rally. There was some sort of Mustang news, even though it wasn't really a reveal per se. There's a 2024 Jeep Gladiator, 2024 GMC Acadia, and a new Cadillac CT5. So that's kind of the rundown. And again, we'll talk about what it was like to be at the auto show this year in Detroit. So the F-150 is a big deal. Obviously, it one of the slides they like to show whenever they're doing a presentation is just how valuable the F-150 is by itself. It produces more, I forget if it's money or value or whatnot, than like things like Starbucks. Like if it were its own company, it's more valuable than most actual large companies, including many on the S&P 500. So it's a big deal for Ford. This is like a mid-cycle refresh would be a way to put it. They tweaked some of the powertrain lineups. There's some interior stuff, but it's obviously not an all-new vehicle, just to be clear here. Big deal here is kind of the tailgate, the bed, which is interesting, and a few other things. Zach, you were living and breathing this thing. What else do people need to know?
Yeah, I mean, you really hit on the big one there, which is that Pro Access tailgate option, which we sort of termed it funnily on the site. We called it the tailgate gain to tailgate, which sort of true. If you're familiar with the Ridgeline or you're familiar with the Ram's multifunction barn door tailgate, this is similar but different. So you can swing it out. The whole thing doesn't swing out, though. It's segmented into three parts, and just the middle part swings out while the other two stay there. That lets you get really close to the bed, where they have added a new storage compartment and some new slots in the wheel humps for some 2x4s to this little DIY bed. So that'll be an option on pretty much every F-150 trim. I think it's neat. I think it'll be good for some people's use cases, maybe not worth it for others. But it is cool now that Ford has a trick tailgate to go along with everybody else's interesting, weird tailgates that we have out there. And you also mentioned on the powertrain front, there's no more 3.3-liter V6. So that was just the base naturally aspirated one. I'm fine with that. The new 2.7-liter EcoBoost is the base engine. And for the V8 aficionados out there, the 5-liter is sticking around. So you don't have to worry about the V8 noises going away. And perhaps even more importantly, they're making the Power Boost the same price as the 3.5-liter EcoBoost upgrade. So now, if you know that was like a big hindrance, it was a big $2,200 option before. Now you can get it for $290, just like you can the 3.5 EcoBoost. So another big one. And I think the last couple big things, you can get a HUD. And you can get the 12-inch digital instrument cluster. That cluster's standard now. There is no analog one. So that's sort of the long and short of it for F-150. Definitely a better truck now, I think, and a successful mid-cycle refresh, as far as I'm concerned.
I think that sums it up pretty well. What did you think of it, John?
I'm a little curious about that tailgate. Just that chunk in the middle of the tailgate swings out. I don't know why they didn't do the whole thing to open from the side, like the ridge line. I don't know if any of you heard any answers from Ford on that, but I'm curious as to how useful this would actually be.
Yeah. So Ford's argument there is that because of where it opens from, where the hinge is and how the detents are placed, you can use it with a trailer hooked up. And the other ones, if you open them very far from where they at, they will swing directly into your hitch setup and all. This one,
that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. This one is set to swing out to 37 degrees to the first detent. And there's a bit of a stop there. You can feel it. You can certainly swing past it if you're overly aggressive with your swing. But you can swing it out to there and then you can get to the bed and not worry about slamming it into the hitch and all and damaging your very expensive tailgate. So that was their reasoning there. Now, I still think, I mean, sure, that swings out like that, but maybe they should have allowed you to swing out the small little left portion as well, just to give you a wider opening. Because it is a fairly narrow spot to throw things through. I mean, it's not big like the Ridgeline's fully open or the Rams can also fully open. So you're just out of luck if you have something huge that you want to put in right there.
That makes some sense. I kind of buy their argument, but also like, I mean, the Ridgeline doesn't, and they don't worry about it. So I could definitely see it the other way. It's funny, the F-150 is so many things to so many people, but I mean, they didn't have like the trick tailgate, you know, not like with GMC and Chevy and, you know, others, even Honda is, there's some complexity there. So they're, and what does Ram call theirs? I'm forgetting what that thing is.
The Ram multifunction tailgate.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Great name. All right. So yeah, I think they kind of had to join in here. You know, I mean, I don't know if buyers necessarily demanded it, but I think you kind of gotta offer it.
Yeah. And it looks like, I mean, there's already pricing out there. It's being like slotted in there as part of a package. It's a $1,290 package that you get a few other things with. It's not like an individual option. So you got to want to spend $1,300 to get it. I think we need to actually use it in the real world to figure out if it is worth $1,300. But it's not going to be cheap. I think the Rams is actually a lot cheaper than that. It's somewhere between $500 and $1,000. So they're overcutting on the price a little.
Is the bed divider part of this tailgate, or is that like a separate kind of thing? If you
No, that's just the new bed in the F-150.
Got it.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, you just they just throw the new slots in there, and the storage boxes are the same way in the side, which are actually kind of neat. Like you can throw jumper cables or like a first aid kit or any number of things back there that are relatively small that you don't want to slide around, and you can also stay weatherproofed. So that's a nice little thing.
I kind of like that more than I like the tailgate. I think that's more interesting and more like if I were to be a truck owner, that'd be something I would be looking for.
Yeah, they took some cues from the Maverick, which, you know, has some of the same sort of cutouts and spots for 2x4s. You can build your own sort of accessories to fit in the back of it, which is really neat. There's a lot of DIY opportunities there.
Most certainly. And before we get off F-150, I feel like I should mention the Raptor too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And the Tremor.
And the Tremor. The off-road trucks, they revealed them the same time as they revealed the rest of the F-150s, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool. And they confirmed that the Raptor R is coming back. And they snuck in at the little reveal event that it's going to have probably more horsepower than the TRX. So that's going to be more horsepower than it had last year, which is interesting. But I think I'm mostly just excited that this supercharged V8 super off-road truck is sticking around. It's not some 1 year or 2 year thing.
Yeah, and there's new decals too.
New decals.
There you go. Yeah.
New decals and new shocks. We'll see if we can sense the difference in the shocks. But Ford says that they're. It's better for off-roading. You might be able to land with more control from jumps. I know how much we jump trucks in our day-to-day life. So,
Well, we probably get to do it more than
it's true.
You know, the average person is, you know. But usually sanctioned.
Yeah. Your landing's always going to be bumpy. And the question is just how much less bumpy do you want it to be, I guess, you know? So. Let's talk, stay with trucks, Jeep Gladiator. This is significant refresh. It's basically what they did to the Wrangler. They then did to the Gladiator. Fairly subtle in many ways, but significant, I think. Little news nugget is that the 4xe version will be coming by 2025. That they kind of tucked that in there with just kind of like paraphrasing their electrification plans, that they're going to have the full lineup of Jeeps electrified in some form, because 4xe is plug-in hybrid, but it's also electric, by 2025. So that includes the Gladiator, which I think makes a lot of people excited. And then the Gladiator, soldiers on. I think they, what we're going to see, I think, in like this segment with like the Wrangler, the Bronco, you throw the Gladiator in there a little bit. We know there's going to be a new 4Runner. All of these off-roady type vehicles, they have to stay fresh in ways that maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago they didn't have to. So, I think you guys have thoughts.
Well, it sure seems like Jeep is trying to push closer and closer into the premium territory. Just like with the 24 Wrangler, this looks more comfortable. Some better interior design that covers up some of the roughness that I find so charming in them already. So, but if someone doesn't want something super bare bones where you can see, the sheet metal through, from the inside of the car and things like that, you got more material covered, improved tech, just more comfortable and upscale. But you can still, get your basic Gladiator without all the stuff inside. But yeah, it just seems like they're trying to appeal to, but bigger wallets, and it makes total sense.
The grill's different. Can you tell?
Honestly, I went up and looked at it at the show, and I was like, man, I honestly wouldn't have known if you hadn't have told me that it was a different grill.
It's reshaped a little bit. I was looking at him because I was trying to get some pictures for social, and I'm like, is that the 24? It's got to be the 24. They wouldn't have the 23 out here. But then I was doing a double take. But if you look closely, you can see it. But just to be clear, Jeep fans, it's not the grill. It's more like the outline of the overall plate, I guess, of the grill. So, yeah.
It's a very subtle thing. What's less subtle is that new infotainment system.
Yep.
I think that all three of us have spent time in the 24 Wrangler with that. That new big Uconnect system, and I don't know about y'all, but I loved it.
It's good.
It felt like a massive upgrade. So
for sure, yeah.
I think that it'll pretty much be the same in the Gladiator. And I know that he's not on the podcast right now, but Byron Hurd has threatened on multiple occasions that he will buy a Gladiator if they make a 4xe.
So yeah,
sounds like, I don't know, next time he's on the podcast, you're gonna have to make him somehow promise to that threat, Greg, because he's pretty much guaranteed it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, as you look at some of the Jeep electric plans, like the all-electric Wagoneer, they kind of spelled out some of those details. They've been hanging out there for months, frankly. They just, every now and then, when you sort of go back and look at the Jeep plans, like what I did when I was trying to write my news story on this, you're like, oh, hey, that sounds cool. And of course, the Recon is on the way. So could be a good time if you're into electric Jeeps. And that infotainment system, to your point, Zach, it's solid, and it's easy to read, it's easy to use. I like that when I drove the Wrangler, you can look at the front cam as well, which is more like an off-road application. But it's super helpful, just even in a parking lot where you're like, oh, I didn't mean to clip that parking lot barrier. It's very helpful.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, having the camera is one thing. Having a good screen to see is even more important, especially off-road, when you're trying to like put your tire between two big rocks or, over a blind crest and stuff. It's really helpful to be able to see the trail and make heads or tails of it. That really changed off-roading for me when you started getting these cameras in vehicles that allowed you to see basically underneath you, which is pretty amazing.
It's really great when you're going over the top of a very steep hill.
Yes.
And you don't know what's on the other side.
Oh, man.
It changes the game.
Yeah. You don't know which way the trail bends, you know?
Yeah.
Unless you can. Yeah. You usually have to have your buddy hang out the window and look and tell you. To the right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's always that moment where your stomach kind of starts to move up, you know, and your throat catches and you're like, is it going to go up? And then you see, you come down and you can see over the hood again. Cause there's always that moment where all you can see is the hood.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, which way, what's going to happen next? So you really need a spotter in some of these situations.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's a Gladiator. New Mojave, but it basically carries over with the same like treatments that it got before, but also it gets all of the normal updates that the rest of the Gladiator lineup gets. I'm excited to drive this one. I think I drove the Wrangler 4xe recently. I'll talk about that in a future podcast, but some of the updates made a bit of a difference, you know, so I assume that's probably going to be my thoughts for the new Gladiator as well. So let's see. We've got a couple things to get to here. So let's move on to the Acadia. This is obviously GMC's long-running midsize SUV. They made it even larger. It's sort of in line with the like the Traverse updates, which makes sense because they're siblings, they're platform mates. It looks a lot more like the rest of the GMC lineup now. You know, if you looked at the Terrain or even the larger Yukon, and this is not that much smaller than a Yukon now. It's a big SUV or crossover, I guess, nominally. But if you look at the grill, there's a lot of the grill and the headlights. There's a lot of family resemblance at this point.
Which I think it really needed.
And
that's something that I feel like GM has struggled with a lot. It's just not differentiating between the brands, you know, enough visually. So I was glad to see it, get some more, borrow some looks from some of the trucks and other things.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys crawled into this thing at the auto show, but the new interior rocks. Like, it is really, really good.
It's really nice.
Yeah. I was at the Chevy Traverse reveal a couple months ago. And I thought, this is a really nice interior and all that. Looks like a huge upgrade from the previous Traverse. It was honestly pretty sad before it. But the GMC interior, I think, really actually, you know, speaks to that premiumness of what GMC is kind of aiming for as a brand, to be above and beyond a Chevy. And they really haven't been succeeding at that in some of their smaller models, I feel. But this really, really hits the nail on the head where I think they need to be. It looks a whole lot like the Sierra EV interior with that like waterfall screen with the big volume knob in the middle, the big toggle buttons below that. I just think it looks really, really nice. I mean, and it's that way on all the trims too, like the AT4, you can go all the way up to the Denali, and like they all look classy. They have their own little unique touches. So this was honestly a little bit of a surprise to me in how much I like this thing.
There's more attention to detail and just better materials now. You look around and you see there's like things that are laser etched, and there's really nice wood trim and you know, really nice textile patterns in the upholstery. It seems like a lot better of a place to spend time than before, for sure.
And one funny touch that Joel mentioned to me when we were staring at it at the show was that the AT4 has the orange marker lights on the fenders that like the Yukon and Sierra heavy duties get. But they've thrown them on an Acadia. And I mean, that plus the all-terrains and the skid plate, It's sort of a faithful recreation, you know, just it goes above and beyond what I think most of these ruggedized crossovers try to do appearance wise to look tough. So, yeah.
Yeah. They didn't just take, you know, a Chevy and and chrome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, we kind of talk about, and we'll talk about this with our next one too, how these aren't super significant refreshes, as in they're more like mid-cycle refreshes. The Acadia is a significant, like, redesign, dare I say. Like, mm-hmm. the wheelbase is different than the outgoing model. The interior is different. The design is dramatically different. Like, if you look at this, the best thing I can say about this is it reminds me a bit of, like, a GMC Terrain Denali, much larger. And I think the Terrain's actually a pretty good-looking little crossover. I think it's all right. And then, but then you get the Acadia in the middle of the GMC, like, crossover SUV lineup. And it was just this kind of long barge-like vehicle that did kind of look like a gussied-up Chevy in some ways. Even though, interestingly, the Traverse and the Acadia did go on kind of divergent paths too, because they, you know, GM did sort of try to differentiate them with different lengths and like different sizes for perhaps different, you know, I guess use cases for, you know, I don't know. It seems like you would. The buyers, the potential buyers, would be cross shopping these vehicles. So I don't know how much you need to differentiate them. Maybe, I don't know, but all that's to say, it looks a lot better. It looks different. It's, yeah, it's a significant upgrade. You know, mm-hmm. cool. I mean, I think that's the Acadia. I think, yeah, I think it's. I caught part of the press conference. Yeah, I mean, it's. I thought they could have even maybe played it up a little more, I guess is what I'm trying to say here, is yeah. It's actually like a redesign, you know, whereas Ford had the, you know, Darius Rucker there to show off a glorified refresh. This is, you know, they did more to it, if you will. That being said, F-150 Acadia, you know, it's big yeah. difference of, you know, where they sit in the company and what people care about.
But yeah, it definitely didn't make as big of a splash at the show as it could have, or as you know the other vehicles did.
I don't know, maybe that speaks to auto shows a little in general, and that like they don't want to be caught in the wake of somebody else. I don't know if that's one of the reasons that we see fewer reveals, but yeah. it definitely did seem to blend in the background when it probably shouldn't have, because yeah. I don't know how you guys did your editor's pick scores, but I gave this one way more than I thought I was going to.
Okay, so
yeah.
Cool. All right. If you're listening to this, it's probably Friday afternoon, Saturday morning, etc. Our editor's picks will have been published at noon, noonish. I'll put it that way, somewhere in there. Come back and we will have all of, you know, our breakdown of how we rank the reveals. Another reveal transition is the Cadillac CT5. This is a lot of fun to drive. I think Cadillacs have been, you know, pretty good looking the last few years. John, you actually did do the backgrounder for this, so why don't you kind of lead off here?
Well, I mean, there's really not a lot different, but the things that are different are executed well. Okay. There's a, you know, up front there's a bigger, wider grille, more aggressive front fascia. They, you know, did some improvements to those vertical signature lightings, made them a little more prominent. You know, the stacked LED headlights are redesigned. They've got a lot more detail in the lighting. If you get up close to the car and look at it, you see a lot more detail. Hard to make it out from the photos. But yeah, that's basically all that happened up front.
Yeah.
And then in the back, well, basically that's all that happened on the outside. They didn't really do much. They tweaked the lighting in the rear just a little bit. Not really in design though, just more in performance. Inside it gets that big 33-inch touch screen. So it's you know, like some of the, like in the Escalade, the right side is touchscreen. Behind the steering wheel is not. And then to the left of the steering wheel, you get more, some more touch functions. So basically everything that isn't covered by the wheel has some touch capability. This screen is really nice looking. The resolution is fantastic. 9K resolution.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
It's better than my TV by far.
Beyond 8K.
Yeah. So yeah, that's really the centerpiece of it. You know, it runs on Google built-in, so Google Assistant, Google Maps, Google Play. They've, you know, added a little bit of functionality to some of the safety systems, like improved lane keep assist and roadside recognition. Super Cruise, you know, I haven't had a chance to drive it yet, but they said that Super Cruise does a better job transitioning between hands-on and hands-off driving. That was sort of a not always super seamless in the past. So they said that they improved that transition. So that we'll have to wait and see on that one till we drive it. Same engines as before, 2-liter turbo. Making 237 horsepower, twin turbo, 3-liter V6, making 335 horsepower, rear wheel drive, optional all wheel drive based on that rear wheel drive. So it's more of a rear bias. Yes, it's got the tour, sports, snow, ice modes, customizable My Mode. But really that's all that's different. There's just really not much. They just gave it a little nip and a tuck up front and, just made it look a little sportier. And the sport, they haven't broken down the trim levels yet. If they're going to change them or not, but there is going to be a sport trim still. And that one has an even more aggressive look to it. It's got this really nice, black mesh grill. It looks good. Pretty much the same CT5, you know, just a little more tech friendly and with that beautiful screen. Oh, and two new colors. There's Deep Space Metallic, which is sort of like a dark gray, and the Typhoon Metallic, which is almost like a sort of darkish seafoam green. And I really like the Deep Space. It's a nice finish.
Yeah, and I know that they haven't revealed the V or the Blackwing yet, but
yeah.
they are coming from what
they
I
are
heard
coming.
Still.
Yes,
yeah, and they will be refreshed, and I presume they'll get this same epic screen.
Yeah.
So
I imagine they would.
Yeah. I know that's one that I'm really looking forward to is that Blackwing and just more years of that supercharged V8 being around.
Yeah.
Manual transmission. Yeah. Keep on refreshing it and keep on. That thing was crazy fast, crazy loud when we drove it a couple of years ago. So yeah. More black wings. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work to drive to that thing. Like it's a lot of work to drive that supercharged V8. A lot of fun.
But yeah, I just think it says a lot to the, you know, the quality that the CT5 already has that they didn't, you know, and the design that they didn't really have to do much to change it. They just, you know, made it better to use on the inside basically.
Yeah, I didn't really have many complaints with the CT5. Yeah. I drove just a regular one, like around when they originally came out. It had the V6, and that thing rocked to drive. I mean, it's better to drive than like a regular 3 Series. I mean, pick any of the Germans, honestly. It's more fun to drive than those. The screens, I think, were really just like the one thing that it was sort of lacking and lagging behind, but this looks like it could, you know, there's no reason not to buy it now unless you're just like somebody that goes, oh, Germany or bust. So yeah, I'm certainly excited about it.
I like the headlights. In some ways seem slightly retro, and by retro I mean like mid 2000s 2010s. Just I had to really look closely here, to John's point. But you can see the LEDs are a little longer. It gives it kind of a little more of like a lower stance, which I think looks good. It reminds me of some of the like the CTSs, you know, from 10 years ago. I think it's a good look. It's a little, you know, a little more standout, you know, flamboyant, a little more out there than, you know, the last CT5, if you will. But I kind of like it. It's a little bit more of a design flourish.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, it definitely takes on a more character as you, you know, get closer to it and can sort of give the lights a good detailed look. But yes, it does. The whole front fascia and the lighting all together do create sort of an optical illusion of it being, you know, lowered and more aggressive in its stance, which is just fine with me. I think it looks good.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I were taking one home, I'd be very tempted to do it in that typhoon color that you mentioned, because it looks like the photos that we have of it online are of that color, and it is a sweet, sweet shade of green blue. So, yes.
Yeah, I like it. All right, well, let's have some fun here. Talk about Mustangs. Zach, you went to you did some hard work here. You stayed till 7 o'clock at the auto show when Ford did kind of a, like just a Mustang corral stable, whatever you want to call it. Just kind of a walkthrough of their, and basically all their, the Mustangs they have. You got to see the GTD in person. And this was sort of the auto show debut of the Rally, which we saw the Mach-E Rally car, I should say, which we saw. It debuted about a week ago, and this is sort of its auto show, you know, party, if you will. So, yeah, all the Mustangs in one place. That's kind of cool. And this, I saw the Rally car. I thought it looked sweet. I was hanging out at the Ford stand earlier in the day. They did a nice job of kind of creating, you know, something that's kind of fun. You know, it's torqueier. It has the off-road, off-road bits, if you will, so it's ready for rallying. I think there's actually a really good use of Mach-E when you're trying to turn up the wick and get a little more performance out of it, because it's not going to be like, you know, hey, let's take the, you know, the regular Mustang and stick it in, like, you know, pick your racing series. This is a crossover that says Mustang, so why not go rallying? I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. It gets me excited. I would love to take this out, you know, on some sandy trails up in northern Michigan, some of the flatter ones. I used to hit some of those, you know, with my WRX and, you know, get a lot of speed going, and it's really exciting. Having a Mach-E that you know, sort of fits that mold a little bit, you know, has that bent to it. It sounds like a lot of fun. I'm sure it's going to be more expensive than I like, but you know, I would love like a you know, more entry level Mach-E that has some of that capability to it, but without all the, I don't need all the extra power and whatnot. But this is a great start. I hope to see more interesting iterations of the Mach-E, you know, for different uses.
Yeah, this one sort of caught me by surprise when they initially revealed it. I was like, whoa, I guess I wasn't expecting like a rally version of the Mach-E. I don't really ever expect like a rally version of any Mustang, but hey, I guess it's all wheel drive and you can just pump up the power. So that's pretty rally like. And then I saw it in person at the show, and it I think it's officially my new like favorite Mach-E variant. Having looked at it, those white rally wheels are so, so cool to look at. And they paired them with these Michelin cross climate tires that almost like give this appearance of like rally tires. The knobbiness to them, it's really neat. And then the giant wing on the back too. Like I'm sure that it does no help to range or to efficiency whatsoever, but it looks rad, and that's kind of all that matters. So yeah, this thing, it is easily my favorite Mach-E variant of them all at this point. It just, it looks the coolest.
It's cool. This kind of feels like Jim Farley was like, let's make the Mach-E a rally car. Just, and then was like, full stop, go figure it out. Do it. I want you guys to do this. So I don't know.
Yeah. Those wheels, Exactly. Wheels are awesome. Are amazing. So cool.
Yeah, if you're going to the show, I definitely recommend just go look at these things, because yeah, they'll surprise you in how aggressive they look in person.
All right. Sounds good. And then you did get to see the GTD up close. That was kind of cool. Yeah. It's got an aero system that is obviously very good for a car that's $300,000. But this has got to be the first time anybody has seen it up close in a minute. I guess it was at Pebble Beach. I don't think Joel Stocksdale, our news guy, actually got over to see it, although maybe he saw it for a minute on the lawn or something. Sometimes they do it that way. But you got to see the thing. So what did you think?
I did. I'm genuinely blown away by this car. Like, yeah. This was honestly one of the biggest, this might be the biggest surprise reveal of the year that we've had, that Ford is making this, obviously with Multimatic, but it is such a cool vehicle. And it obviously looks kind of like a Mustang, but it is also entirely its own thing at the same time. Like, every single body panel is made out of carbon fiber. You wouldn't really know it, though, looking at it, because it's all painted this, like, really beautiful, like, Shelby blue. The wings are absolutely nutty. The size of the diffuser, the splitters, the DRS system on it. Like, it's all very spacey, but at the same time, it's integrated quite cleanly. When you look at it in person, it's not this, like, I don't know, track special, like, crazy mobile. Like, it looks like, you know, you could drive it down the road and it wouldn't be entirely out of place. At that event, they had Jim Farley there. They had Larry Holt, who's the chief technical officer for Multimatic, who did a lot of the engineering work on this thing. They chatted a bit about the development of it. Jim Farley said, like, three times over and over, like, this car should have never happened. Like, there's no reason why this thing should have happened. Like, it makes no sense at all, but here it is. We're so happy it's here, blah, blah, blah. And I think that just kind of speaks to how incredulous a project like this is from Ford. I mean, they obviously blew us all away with the Ford GT, and now they've kind of done it again with the GTD. So, you know, looking at it in person, absolutely worth the $300,000 plus price point that they're going to throw on it. You know, they said it's going to be over 800. Farley was like, and you know, we're going to have way, way more than that by the time it's officially announced. This is a very, very special vehicle. I'm just glad that I got to see it. And there's not going to be many of them out there. And Ford said it's going to be on the show floor. So
that's cool.
You should be able to go down there and see it. It's definitely a special chance to see a special car. So
that makes me want to go down for the public days too. I think my son would probably want to check it out too.
Yeah. This is one of the things I really would have liked to have seen on the show floor. So I know Wally wants to go to the show, so we might head down for the public days and check this out.
It's maybe worth the ticket just to go see the car. Honestly, yeah, you've got to see it.
I think it's a good transition to just the general feel of the show. It's the Detroit Auto Show, I think, has been the subject of a lot of, like, you know, navel gazing, obsession. What is it? What will it be? What did it used to be? And I think we've been through such a time of transition. You know, 2019 was like the last Detroit Auto Show, North American International Auto Show, if you will, right before the pandemic, actually. It was it was January 19. But I mean, there were fewer reveals, but we were still in that mindset that it's a big deal car show. But it felt like it was already starting to be diminished. 2020, you get the pandemic. 2021 was this kind of outdoor thing at the M1 concourse, which that was divisive. It rained that day. I think some people thought, hey, this should be the start of something. Other people were like, what the hell is this? So that was kind of divisive. And then last year, it was like, hey, bring it back to the convention center downtown. There's some inside stuff. There's some outside stuff. I thought this year, and I really want to hear what you guys think, they're starting to figure it out. I think press days were still a little quiet. But I also think that's not going to be a point of emphasis 100% anymore. I think auto shows are really changing. And in Detroit's case, it was always so much of a press show and us being in the press that we almost couldn't think of it any other way. But the fact of the matter is, before 1989, when it became the North American International Auto Show and got that OICA designation, which is like sort of being in the elite club of international auto shows, it was a regional auto show put on by a dealer group. And as I was walking the floor, I thought this year, I was like, okay, they have four-ish interesting enough reveals that it's worth your time to show up. I think there's opportunity to do it better. Toyota was there with what was, I think, a factory stand. I think you got to get Toyota to do a press conference. If you can do that, suddenly you've probably got a leg up on New York and LA and Chicago. So that would be my prescription there. But I thought the floor was much better considered. You had a nice use of test tracks. You had the EV sort of thing where you could line up and test drive almost any EV on sale today. That was cool. And it looked cool. It didn't just look like some carnival ride. They had lights. It was set up. The cars were there. It was pretty cool. There was 11 Teslas, inside and out that you can test or I think ride in actually. And those actually were, fun fact, those were from Tesla. I talked to the director of the show beforehand and they were actually corporate Teslas. I guess there's really no other way to do it, frankly, because there's no real dealers. But Tesla, they reached out to them and Tesla's like, sure, how many do you want? So I think that shows that the show does still have some, ability to flex, if you will. So I thought it felt more like a show where it was okay from a press standpoint, maybe still some work to do if they want to make that a priority. But I think if, as a consumer, you walk into the show, I don't think you're going to be disappointed. I think the stands were better than last year, frankly. I thought Jeep stands still look legit. I thought Chevy's stand and Ford stands still look legit. You talk about the things you can see from the Mach-E rally car to the GTD. Stellantis did a nice job of dusting off the Daytona concept and the Airflow concept. So like there was more stuff. When you're walking around and you're not in the industry, you're going to be like, oh, this is cool. What is this? Oh, this is cool. Okay. And you care less about some of the press stuff. The fact that Mercedes doesn't have a skating rink with a two-level bar and espresso stand means nothing to you. You might like to see some Mercedes, and I didn't really see any. Maybe they're there too, and I just missed them. But they did do a good job of kind of cobbling together like a luxury stand. Like there's the SP1 Monza Ferrari. It felt like a considered show that you could go and be like, that was fun. I liked it. Whereas last year it felt like there was a huge food court. There was like some like random vintage cars. It just felt very Frankenstein together. This time it felt much more natural, organic. And like I would take my kid to it and not even be walking around with my snarky journalist hat on being like, oh, this isn't how it used to be when I was a pup. I think I could go to it and enjoy it. So that's my two cents.
100%, man. Before I was a car writer, I wanted to go to the show. I didn't really care. I mean, it was neat to see, the concept cars and stuff. I just wanted to go and get up close with all the different cars, get to sit in cars that maybe I'd consider buying.
Yeah.
Just not having big, huge, splashy press reveals where there's a G-Wagon and a giant block of resin or a Jeep driving through a pane of glass, or having, waterfalls indoors and whatnot. I think that's fine. People just want to see the cars, and some of the concepts are cool. I was glad to see, like you said, like the Airflow and the Daytona out there, ones that, we've already seen before, but if you missed it before, you're going to be excited when you see that on the show floor. It felt very, very walkable. You could sort of see across the show floor. I think the ride-alongs from the EV one and then the the Ford and Jeep and Ram ones with the sort of simulated off-road courses, which were, you know, looked actually kind of hardcore, some of it. That's a great thing for a consumer to actually get to sit in the car and get its capabilities explained to you and, you know, feel what it's like, you know, with the possibilities of what you could do with it. I think that's a wonderful selling tool mm-hmm. and just fun. And yeah, the EV track, you know, throughout the whole show, just from the back of the hall, you just heard tires squealing over and over mm-hmm. and over, from, you know, doing launches on this, you know, acceleration part of the track and then holding speed through the corners back there. And then they had like a bunch of charging information there, you know, a bunch of sort of ambassadors for, you know, how to, you know, live with an electric car. It's a wonderful mm-hmm. Resource for consumers who want to know about, you know, these cars and want to, you know, get their hands on them and see what they might want to buy in the future. This definitely felt more like, you know, like the 2003 public show than mm-hmm. like, you know, the 2017 you know, press days or something, which is totally fine.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that last sentence you said was my feeling too. Zach, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that auto shows more and more are becoming, you know, for the actual public than mm-hmm. for media, mm-hmm. Because we all walk around just like you said with our journalist hat on, like, oh, it's 11 a.m. Well, I guess there's nothing else to see here at this point. There's no more reveals or whatever. And it's like, okay, sure. But I mean, most people that do go to the auto show, they go there just to see a car. I mean, when I went when I was young, like I'd see XYZ car and it would have been revealed 5 years ago or whatever. Like, and it's just they haven't refreshed it. But it's just sitting there on the floor, but I just want to go sit in it. And that's I think a lot of what makes an auto show good for people that actually go buy a ticket for the public days. Would it be great if more automakers were actually there to support that? Yeah. I mean, it's basically the big three. There's some other smaller booths from like Honda, Toyota, VW, but mm-hmm. that's about it from like an OEM support at this point. Like if I remember going to the show, I mean, you could see every single Porsche there. You could see, you could go yeah. sit in every single Porsche. And I mean, in Maybach, Mercedes, BMW, Rolls. I mean, to me, that was a lot of the appeal of going like as a kid and as like a teenager, like seeing that those brands were still there and they had all their newest things. And it wasn't just like a regional dealer thing, which mm-hmm. is kind of what it is now. So from that aspect, yeah, I'm still disappointed and that probably won't ever change. But, I guess one other thing, like I feel like a lot of the point, like moving it to like the summer and fall was to do some outside activities.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed, yeah, I know where
you're
going.
There weren't really any mm-hmm. outside activities at all, for this. And that was like the selling point for changing it from winter. I don't know if maybe like the test track and the like those test drives, they were supposed to be outside. They moved them inside, maybe to fill up some floor space, something like that.
Yeah.
Or what? But I certainly would have loved to see more action outside than what we got as is. So I mean I still think that there's plenty of reason to go down there, but just don't expect it to be like the Detroit Auto Show from 15 years ago or something like that, where you got to see every single OEM show up with all of their new things. So
15 years ago was the
Go ahead.
I was going to say 15 years ago was the 2008 Auto Show when a lot of automakers were dropping out. So maybe it is a little bit like the 2008 Auto Show. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, I guess that's where it started to go downhill around that time. So.
Yeah. I think, I think that's a really interesting observation too. Like last year there was a giant duck outside and it seemed like there was some stuff going on. Yeah. Where was the duck, man?
Where's the duck this year? Come on, guys. Right?
I would. So you guys tell me if I'm crazy, but I actually kind of like the idea. To your point, Zach, you're right. They were like, we're going to do it mid-September. The weather's going to be great. It's going to be this outdoor fair bazaar. You're going to stroll. You're going to eat. It's going to take over half of downtown. It's going to be this great moment in your life. This was basically Huntington Place. But I thought it was okay because I thought, again, they really did that EV track well inside. Mm-hmm. And I also think it's kind of a pain to go back outside and like get into whatever car you want to ride in. So I don't know. I you're right. This isn't what they said they were going to do, but I think it's okay. And maybe they will during public days have some outside stuff that they didn't have for the press days. I don't know.
Yeah, there's supposed to be part of,
yeah.
I think maybe Ford and even Tesla might have something outside on, you know, part of the Detroit GP course.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That would be very cool, actually. So I'm going to go look. I'm going to show you guys how old I am. This is an Auto Week byline from 2008, written by yours truly, talking about Mitsubishi pulling out of the upcoming Detroit Auto Show, which was five companies. They followed Rolls-Royce, Land Rover, Ferrari. Once upon a time, Ferrari had a stand, as well as Suzuki. And now, if you remember what November 2008 was like, it was not great, Bob, for the car business. That was the tarp fall, if you will. And yeah, and then obviously 2009 was the bailouts. But and the show did come back, though, from a press perspective, like from like 2010 right through. Mm-hmm. That was a big deal show, you know, right through into like 18, 19. I even remember when they did the Cadillac concept, that ELR thing that they rolled out with, I think Bob Lutz rolled it out. And it was very clear they were using the show and its big stage to try to show off to like the government, hey, we can make electric cars here at GM, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So even in the downtimes, it still had such a big stage. But, you know, we'll see. It'll be interesting. I'd like to get to the Chicago Auto Show, see kind of how that focuses, what their focus is. I've thought LA and New York have done a good job in the last couple of years of carving out, like building on that regional identity, because they never really were international shows like Detroit was. So in some ways, the fact that they didn't have to have this kind of fall from grace, I think that almost helped them, if that makes sense. You know, like they weren't the king of the hill. So the fact that car companies weren't making big deals out of them, where they were like, okay, yeah, we only have three reveals. Well, we used to only have eight, so it's not that big a deal. So that's a long-winded way of saying I'll be interested to see what, you know, what the upcoming shows look like. And I like auto shows. They're a lot of fun.
They are.
Same. I want nothing more than for the Detroit show to be a crazy, crazy palooza everything again.
Yeah.
It would make me so happy.
I was able to get some charcuterie from the Lincoln stand, which time stopped there. They had their gold drapes and their shiny Lincoln crest, and they had a lovely charcuterie stand with a coffee setup in there, some Great Lakes coffee. I had a nitro cold brew. So I walked in there and it was 2012. So I don't know. I wish a few of the other companies had done that from a press standpoint, but you know, so it goes. Any final thoughts on Detroit, guys?
Man, I love the location too. I love, you know, when you want to get away from the sights and sounds of the show floor and have a little peace of quiet, you can go look at the river and see, you know, there was like a, some sort of crazy sailboat, like a junk boat almost out there yesterday. And then, you know, you'll see freighters coming up and down in it. It's just Detroit. Detroit's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
It's beautiful now with the Riverwalk. Like they have such an amazing area around there that can just, you can throw a massive party there if you can, as the Detroit Auto Show.
Sounds good. When you guys got home last night, varying degrees of lateness, did you have a cold beverage? We haven't done any drink recommendations in a while, but I had a glass of, what did I have? I had some sort of spritzer for a minute, and then I, because I was outdoors, and then I had like one of those high noons, I think, and then I had a glass of white wine, Chateau Chantal, I think. It's like from up north, from the Grand Traverse Winery.
I stayed there.
It was. I didn't even know the bottle was mostly gone. It was in the fridge. I'm like, this looks good. So I had some of that to take the edge off after a long day.
Yeah, Chateau Chantal is great. They have a B&B attached to the winery. And Kat and I stayed there for our anniversary several years ago. It was wonderful.
That sounds fun. I may add that to the list of upcoming family getaways or, you know, So, yeah, what did you guys have to take the edge off? If you did, maybe you went straight to bed or you got busy with family stuff.
I had one of those new Hazy Two Hearteds.
I've been meaning to try those.
Yeah, it's pretty good, honestly. Okay. I might like it more than just a regular Two Hearted, which I do like. I've never loved just a regular Two Hearted, but tried the Hazy, and it's definitely a good upgrade slash slight difference maker on the original formula. So can recommend.
Okay, I like a Hazy IPA. Last I had a Two Hearted. To me, a two-hearted is a time and place kind of thing. It's not like an every down, if you will, but I had one during the Lions game last Thursday, which they beat the Chiefs. Hey, it was a good way to take the edge off. How about yourself, John? You get the final word here as far as drinks.
I didn't have an opportunity last night. I got home. I drove up to our cottage the show. And so I rolled in pretty late and just crashed. But my wife has her sister for her birthday or something, got her a subscription to sort of this Cocktail of the Month Club. It's from Portland Syrups, I think it's what it's called. And so it comes with, you know, some sort of flavored syrup and some bitters and some garnish. And it's a different cocktail every month, and really good. One was sort of a hard root beer. You add your liquor of choice to it, but one was like a hard root beer. Some of them are like really refreshing, fruity cocktails. Really neat, really delicious drinks. Some of them are like spicy and smoky. But yeah, that's every once in a while when that box shows up each month, we're always excited to see what's in there. Because some of them are really good.
All right, sounds good. All right, so those are our recommendations for unwinding from a long auto show day. If you check it out this weekend or in the coming week, you come home and or maybe enjoy one of the many great new restaurants and bars open in downtown. So that's always a good option too. If you enjoy the show, please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We need some Spend My Money, so please send them to us. That's podcast@autoblog.com. If you have any questions, you want to get in the mailbag, same address. We'd love to hear from you. John, Zach, it's been good hanging out with you. Everybody else, and you too as well. Be safe out there, and we'll see you next week.